Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
Just pray if some other love should rob me of my candy and cake.
That takes you back. WGN Radio. That's from 1950. Evelyn Knight's version of Candy and Cake got to number 20 in Billboard. Same time, Mindy Carson had it on the charts and got to about number 14, so it was all the rage. But candy never goes out of style, and when producer Tom suggested this topic, I was frankly unaware that there was a history, and I knew obviously some candy and Chicago were synonymous with all the manufacturing that happens here, but I had no idea that basically we're the candy capital of the world. I also had no idea that there was such a title as candy historian, but Dr. Leslie Goddard holds it. She's a PhD, and I welcome her to WGN Radio, and the first question I got to ask is, now, your PhD is not as candy historian, is it?
It's not. I wish I could say it were. But it is in American history. So
well, that's
they go
good.
Together, right?
Well, now, I was also hoping, since you were interested in candy and you do have a PhD, that your dissertation was somehow edible. What was it about?
Actually, it was on women's history. It was on the women's suffrage movement.
Oh.
But it was all with the intention of going into working in museums, and that's kind of what pulled me to candy.
And that is interesting, because normally we think about candy as delectable and delightable, but we don't think about museums dedicated to it, but they actually exist.
They do, actually. And it's kind of fascinating to me, actually, because it's one of those things that people start collecting. You know, they're candy wrappers when they're kids, one of those inexpensive things. And a lot of people get interested in collecting and in history through an early love of candy. I was working, actually, though, at a museum in just north of Chicago, and found out that these really famous candy figures had lived there. Milton J. Holloway of Milk Duds, and Otto Schnering, who invented Baby Ruth and Butterfinger. And I got fascinated by how did these great candy people live in this town where I worked. And then suddenly started to realize it wasn't just that town. It was almost any town in the greater Chicago area. And, of course, the city itself had great candy figures. And it just became this kind of hole that I fell into and got really, really fascinated by.
And some of it makes sense from the standpoint of, in its essence, it's manufacturing. And certainly Chicago is well-tooled for that. And then, of course, we all know about Wrigley's, who I don't think were planning to make gum, but they wound up... They wound up having a runaway bestseller, but I had no idea that we're talking about Tootsie Rolls and Brock's and Frango and Mars. Mars, I never,
right.
You know, I don't know where I would have thought Mars was, but not there.
So. I know. Me too. Yeah, it's actually really remarkable. You know, there was for much of Chicago's history, about a third of all the candy manufactured in the United States was coming out of Chicago, you know. You went to a candy counter in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 1 in 3 chance that whatever you bought was made or invented in Chicago. It's an incredible amount of history. Yeah.
Well, I don't think there is a person alive who doesn't remember candy from their childhood and really mourns the passing of certain candy. It doesn't matter what it is. Yes, exactly. And it's like, how did that go away as far as that goes?
So, and there's actually a lot of interest right now in retro candy and candies, companies that are able to find for you some of these vintage candies, because they are hard to find at regular outlets. But, you know, you can still find O. Henry bars in some places, and some of them are gone forever. Do you remember Marathon, that wonderful sort of braided caramel thing?
Yeah, sure.
That one's gone, but there are similar ones that you can still find. In fact, there's some companies that actually will put together for you a box of candies of the whatever, candies of the 50s, candies of the 60s, candies of the 70s. Like you said, it's kind of amazing, these powerful emotional memories that candy can bring back. You know, for a lot of people, it's the first time they had a commercial interaction was buying candy. And
sure,
seeing an old candy from the past can bring back incredible memories. It's kind of fascinating.
Now, I thought Marathon was a Mars product, the Curly Whirly or something, the Marathon bar.
Yes, right, exactly. Curly Whirly is Cadbury today.
Yeah.
But, yeah, exactly. But it's a very, very similar one.
So
yeah.
I couldn't, not that I'd particularly want to, but if I wanted to, that means I can't go online and find the original Marathon bar?
No, no, you can't.
This is a loss. This is a real
loss.
It
is, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It is.
It wasn't around that long, I guess. It supposedly, you know, was gone by the 80s. Now, one thing that I dislike more than they just go away, because when they go away, I'll have to make peace with it. It's when they're still there, but they've changed the formula. And this is just wrong. For instance, I always liked Smith Brothers cough drops. I have nothing to have no idea if they help a cough, and I don't care. But I would eat them by the dozens, and so I would when I'd buy them, like 500 packs, no lie. Well, about a decade ago now, I bought my 500 packs. I got it, and to my horror, they changed the formula.
Oh, no!
Yes, exactly. I sold them on eBay. But I had absolutely no warning of this happening. And so for those of us who think that we've come across exactly what we want, how do we know what's the real deal other than ordering it?
I know. It's very hard to tell. And you know, very often it changes in candy reflect, in a lot of ways, changes in the world, right? You know, because companies are tweaking recipes. Profit margins in candy are not large. So tweaking any recipe, you know, doing whatever you can to maximize the profitability. But also, changing tastes. There was a famous, Mars had a bar for a long time called Forever Yours.
Yes.
Just really good. It was vanilla nougat and caramel and dark chocolate. Mars pulled it from the lineup when was it? In the 80s, I think, or the late 70s. Anyway, they tweaked the recipe, and when they relaunched it, it was now called Milky Way Dark. And now it's what? Milky Way Midnight Dark. It's a good reflection of the fact that Americans are very, very loyal to our favorite candy brands. If you look at some of the, you know, the biggest sellers, if you're talking about candies like M&M's, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, Snickers, oh my gosh, now my mouth is watering.
Yeah.
Something like I think it's the latest statistics I've got are that about two-thirds of candies on the sort of commercial, you know, mainstream grocery store, drugstore, gas station candy bars have been around for 70 years or more. It's really difficult to get Americans to try something new. You know, most of our favorite candies come from the 20s, 30s, 40s. So when candy companies want to sort of launch something new or get you to try something new, they will often do them as spin-offs. Spin-offs are a huge trend in candy today. So they made this Forever Yours seem like a spin-off of a Milky Way. And it works, you know. We'll try. I'll try a Milky Way spin-off. It's really interesting, our psychology about candy.
Well, it is. And, of course, when we think of Mars, we think about, you know, your dime store candy. But, of course, their Ethyl M brand, when you go to the mall and have some of that stuff, some of that's pretty pretty intensely high dollar. But and really good, you know, worth it for a cream.
Right.
You know, you talk about an orange cream with milk chocolate or something. Yes. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I want to eat. But I understand that Mars bars are now part of Ethyl M's line in Mars.
Yeah, now they always were connected. The story of Mars candy is really fascinating, but essentially, the Frank Mars, who was sort of the founder of the whole empire, his wife was named Ethel. And when their son, Forrest, who is one of the great characters in American corporate history, when he came in, when he came in and rehauled the business, when he eventually left it to his sons, he wasn't happy with how his sons were running the business. So he launched Ethyl M directly as a a sort of high-end competition to his son's company. It's an amazing story.
Wow.
Yeah, the Mars family is real. I mean, one of the greatest companies, you know, one of the largest privately held companies in the world today, and just fascinating. There's a wonderful book called The Emperors of Chocolate about Hershey and Mars and their differing approaches.
Well, yeah. I know Mars always gets noticed as the sixth largest privately held company in the United States. It's always on the Forbes list for that. And the thing that worried me, though, is when you look at it and you find out the founders, okay, there's Franklin Clarence, there's Forrest, all that. And then you find the subsidiaries. Right. And okay, Wrigley, all right, they can assume Wrigley. That's fine. But then I get pet care and fish care, and I get nauseous.
Yeah.
This is just not right. You know, there's just no line extension in that name. Hopefully they're not calling it Mars Pet Care.
Right. But, you know, it's a really good example, I think, of how, I mean, the Mars company has done such a remarkable job of maximizing profits at every turn. And it's a very different approach than you often see. Many, many candy businesses begin as family-run businesses that grow and slowly expand, but they tend to stay very focused, and that's what makes something like Mars so intriguing. It's actually less surprising that they would take on something like Wrigley, and I think a lot of people don't even know that Wrigley today is a subsidiary of Mars, but it's actually within the candy industry. One of the big things, and this has had a huge effect on Chicago candy, is that consolidation has been such a major player in the last 20, 30 years. And lot of major candy brands have been purchased by the biggies, especially Hershey and Mars. So in Chicago, a number of companies have disappeared because their brands have been acquired by Hershey or Mars. So, for example, there was a great candy company called Leaf, which made Whoppers and do you remember Rainblow, the gum that you could blow bubbles and colors?
Yeah.
Those Leaf candy company has disappeared, but the brands have remained. You know, you can still buy Whoppers because today they're made by Hershey. So it's you know, a number of our great candy companies are no longer around, but thankfully we can still enjoy Whoppers and Milk Duds. And
that's sadly, that's the story of business these days, the consolidation. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's banks or department stores or radio stations. There's two of them, basically. And true with candy as well. There's Mars and there's Hershey. And we're talking about all that and more in your favorites with Dr. Leslie Goddard, who has a sweet job, to say the least. And she, her PhD, by the way, is from Northwestern, and obviously she's a legitimate academic. But she, due to museum work, knows more than anyone ever should about candy. And she will explain to me next, see, I'll put her on the spot, exactly how Mars got divided into food processing and veterinary services. If they're not making Alpa, well, what is this? All right. Your calls are welcome. 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh on WGN Radio. Dr. Leslie Goddard, who is an author and candy historian, is joining us. And I assume the Mars connection to Chicago is because of the Wrigley acquisition. But at what point did they decide, okay, we've got gum, we've got candy, we've got, now we need pet food?
You know, it actually is the case that they came to Chicago pretty early on. The original invention of Milky Way was in Minneapolis, which is where Frank Mars was. They moved to Chicago in 1929, in part because of the fact that their profits could soar, because Chicago, and this is the big reason why Chicago became a candy center, is because transportation costs were rock bottom. The transportation center of the nation in those days was in Chicago. So in some ways, it would make sense if you're going to be in a food commodity business and you've got the food transportation networks lined up, moving into another line of food is not that big a leap. And in fact, Forrest Mars, who was such a character, he was insistent that there was a real similarity. He would have his employees, you know, you had to try out all of the products. So you're trying out the Snickers bars, you're trying out the Milky Way and have a little bit of Calcan dog food.
No, tell me.
Oh, yeah.
No, tell me.
These are among the crazy stories you
tell
hear
me. No.
Of the
now,
Mars.
I had heard, and of course, candy is one of those wonderful things that every city wants to claim. I had heard they went from Minneapolis to Bakersfield, California to make this stuff. So, claiming.
Yes, they do. And, you know, the Mars company, it's sprawling. And I always have to say, you know, the factory, the headquarters and factory in Chicago, which actually is still in operation, it's the oldest continuously operating factory in Chicago. It hasn't been the headquarters since the 50s, and now their headquarters are just outside Washington, D.C. So it's a sprawling, it's a behemoth. I think today they have, last figure I had, they had about 15 factories in the United States. So
yeah, I'm sure they've got them all, probably got them all over the world, too, because there's probably no country that doesn't have Mars. But I'm going to have to recover here from the idea that he made them taste the dog food.
I just,
you know, that's something. I know there's a lot of history written about Mars, but they need to highlight that, because that's really a litmus test for worker loyalty. There's just, you know,
exactly.
I'd draw the line at that. So Dr. Leslie Gardert is talking with us, and I bet there's a candy from your past that you just hunger for. Is it still around? Can you find it? I bet you Leslie will know off the top of her head. So 888-876-5593. That's 8888-Raleigh. I found snow caps recently. Unfortunately, I found them in the dollar stores, which made me wonder. Oh, but I threw caution to the wind and ate them anyway. But what is it that you're yearning for? Tell me next on WGN Radio. Ah, candy. Yes, I know. Come on. You've laid awake at night and wondered what would really happen to you if you swallowed that Fizzy's tablet without water. Yeah, you wondered what became of Lick-A-Maid and so much more. And the person who knows is Leslie Gardert, author and candy historian. And, well, here come the floodgates. I knew this would do it. So, Tyrone and Galena, welcome to WGN Radio.
Well, thank you for putting me on, Raleigh.
Sure.
Well, first of all, my favorite candy bar is the Zero Bar.
Okay.
Absolutely number one in my opinion. And whatever became of just the plain old, good old-fashioned Mars bar?
Good questions. Zero Bar, which I believe is still being made, it was out of Minneapolis. It was Hollywood Brands. And it was one of those candy bars that came about in the just right after World War One, sometime right around 1920. It became part of Leaf. I think the Zero Bar is still being made. I think it's being made by Hershey, but it's hard to find.
Yeah.
They don't stock it. You have to go somewhere special. But you're in better standing as far as the Mars Bar. In the United States, when they pulled it from the market, they tweaked the recipe, and you know what they relaunched it as? Milky Way with almonds. Yeah, it's not the same.
Milky Way with
that's
almonds.
That's close.
No, that's heresy.
Yeah.
That's just, I know, Tyrone, you agree with me. That's just wrong.
Yeah,
you're telling me that the Zero Bar goes all the way back to World War One.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. I think it was launched right after the war, 1920, something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
It was Hollywood Brands, and then they were making it in Centralia. And I think it wound up becoming part of Sara Lee for a minute, and then Hershey's, when they took over Leaf, got it.
Yeah. For those of you listening who don't know it, Zero Bar, which is fabulous, I agree. It was like nougat and caramel covered in white chocolate.
Yes.
And there's not a lot of candy bars with white chocolate coating.
Mm-mm.
No. It was diabetes on a stick. I mean, this stuff was so sweet. Yeah, but yes, it was just lovely. Good memory, Tyrone. Thank you for calling.
I've got one more candy here, if you don't mind.
Sure.
What were these things called? They were like, sometimes they came in a can, and they were like little gold pillows, and they were like butterscotch and toffee and peanuts and little gold pillows, like, and I just loved them.
Yeah,
do you have a
like
name for those?
The heart candy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ah, boy, that's a good one. That is a really good one. You know, there were a number of companies that made that kind of candy. And that's actually, it's a good point historically. There's a lot of candies that, like, a lot of people made them, but then one company signed it. For example, Jawbreakers, you know, why you'd want to break your jaw on a candy, right? But a lot of companies made them, and Ferrara, which became the most famous maker of them, rebranded them as Jawbusters. So it's a similar thing when you're talking about those kind of filled kind of hard candies. Boy, I'm drawing a blank. If anyone's out there that's got the goods on that one.
Yeah, but I think if you go to Google, the dreaded Google, and search, you will see pictures. And I'm looking at the little gold pillows as I speak. Now, of course, this darn picture doesn't tell me what they are, but I bet if you look hard enough, you'll see them. Now, whether you'll ever find them again, they might have been, you know, stop and make years ago. But, yeah, I know what that's like. Well, let us know if you figure it out, Tyrone.
Yep, well, I'll tell you what, if you ever call your cable company and talk to an operator, they sound like they got a mouthful of jawbreakers because you can't understand a word you're saying.
Yes. Well, right, but they would have to be foreign jawbreakers. Thanks for calling.
That's right.
Okay. Right.
Appreciate that. Yes, Donna in Oak Lawn, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh.
Hey, Donna.
First off, I remember nickel candy bars.
Of course.
From the 50s.
Of course.
One of the ones that was my favorite was it had fudge on the bottom, marshmallow, nut sprinkled on top, and it was coated in dark chocolate. I think it was called a Gee Whiz bar. I hadn't been able to find those since the 1950s. But then after that, I got hooked on halva.
Oh.
Every time I went to the deli with my dad, I'd either beg him to buy me pickles or halva bars. They also were nickel.
That's so funny you mentioned that, because I had no idea what that was. And I had a neighbor many years ago, Alex Radutsky. He was the nicest guy, had two young daughters. And it turned out that he owned Joya Halva. And, you know, as I used to call it. And, I mean, he had more money than God. But I had no idea what this was. And he brought it to me once. And I said, this is not half bad. So I think
it's actually a very ancient kind of candy, you know, some of the earliest ones.
The Joya, but I haven't been able to find anymore.
Well,
I used to be able to Google it and find it from New York.
Right.
No more.
Well, his daughter Rachel died. Miriam is still alive, and I think the son was running it last I knew. But my information is ancient. So but he was in the days when there weren't too many dads who were single parents. He was, and he would take those two daughters out, and he was just a prince, a nice guy.
And then I remember buying. Weebolts had butterscotch. They were Keeler butterscotch, and they were gold wrapped. And it was a hard butterscotch that was just buttery and rich and impossible to find nowadays.
Remember when department stores always had those great candy counters? I remember the Weebolts one.
Yeah.
And then you'd get that smell through the whole store while you're shopping, you know. Yeah.
Well, the other thing is Ferrara still exists, and I think they're still independent and owned by Ferrara, because you can buy their candies at the bakery in the medical district in Chicago. And their outlet store is a little bit west of Harlem Avenue, and you can still smell the lemon heads in the morning. It is just hypnotic.
You know, I do.
It really is.
You still get lemon heads, and I know you can still get... the Red Hots.
Yeah.
Yes, Red Hots, Atomic Fireballs.
Oh, yes, they still have those, too.
Well,
get Jawbreakers.
I think you can still get Joyva. I just looked it up while we were talking, and an article from 2 years ago has Richard, who was Alex's son, still running it. It started by Nathan Radutsky, who came from Kiev in 1907, but they're still in the Williamsburg section of Brooklyn. So you might want to research it, Donna, and it's Radutsky, Radutzky. And
thank you. I will.
Sure, and if you...
I used to get the vanilla chocolate-coated bars, and, of course, they were a nickel back then.
Yeah.
And just loved them. And the last time I ended up finding them in an Arab market and bought it by a 5-pound block,
yeah.
And it was not the same. And
you know, it's funny. There's such an impact of immigrants on the history of candy.
Yes.
It's a perfect example. You know, that very taste coming from the Middle East comes to the United States, and you know, we pick up a lot of our flavors through that kind of assimilation. And very similar thing with Ferrara. You know, Salvatore Ferrara came from Italy, brought this experience in panning, and happily for all of us, introduced panned nuts and other panned candies. You forget that immigration had such a huge impact on the candy business, but it did.
Well, I think the crossover is important, too.
Mm-hmm.
Radotsky is Russian, and you can find halva now in some Grecian markets in a huge block.
Yeah.
And in Arab markets, but nowhere near any delis that I know of.
Well, delis are so different now anyway. But all right.
Donna, thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. You know, it makes sense that it would be immigrants, and especially ethnic immigrants, because many of them, when they get to this country, were not necessarily going to be hired for corporate jobs and those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
Candy was an inexpensive business.
Absolutely.
You know, get a good recipe and a couple kettles and you're good to go. Even names like Brock's used to have advertisements, and underneath the logo it'd say, ask for B-R-O-X, because to a lot of Americans, a German name like Brock was hard to pronounce.
Right.
Another good Chicago candy company.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, but you read the history, like you say, like Mars here.
And in Arab markets, but nowhere near any delis that I know of.
Well, delis are so different now anyway. But all right.
Donna, thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. You know, it makes sense that it would be immigrants, and especially ethnic immigrants, because many of them, when they get to this country, were not necessarily going to be hired for corporate jobs and those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
Candy was an inexpensive business.
Absolutely.
You know? Get a good recipe and a couple kettles and you're good to go. Even names like Brock's used to have advertisements, and underneath the logo it'd say, ask for B-R-O-X, because to a lot of Americans, a German name like Brock was hard to pronounce.
Right.
Another good Chicago candy company.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, but you read the history, like you say, like Mars here, they're saying, well, my mom taught me how to dip chocolate. And that's literally what it was.
Mm-hmm.
They were small family businesses.
Yeah.
And it was perfect for individuals who came here, were looking for something to do, no capital, and no one interested. And maybe they didn't speak the language. And boy, did we ever benefit. We've got Brian and Cicero. Welcome to WGN
Radio.
Hi,
Raleigh.
Hey, Brian.
Hi, Raleigh.
Hi.
How are you? I was a messenger downtown. I remember the old Slowpoke Black Cow building that used to be at 300 West Ontario. It was across the street from Pepper Construction. I mean, across the alley from Pepper Construction. The building was torn down in 95 when I was in Albuquerque, and you could see Slowpoke and Black Cow written on the side of the building if you were at Orleans facing east. And they tore it down in 95, but there's a parking lot there today. I was going to ask, where can you find Wayne Bunn? Remember those maple ones? Remember how good those were?
Yes.
Maple
so
vanilla
good.
Chocolate?
Actually,
remember those Wayne buns?
Yeah.
Yes.
Where can you get those now?
They're actually not that hard to find. I believe the Vermont Country Store has them. And I think if you go to some of the Cracker Barrel places, but there's also some retro candy stores in Chicago that have them. I think I've seen them at the one, there's a place on Navy Pier. Retro candy stores are becoming a big thing in the last 10, 20 years. In fact, if you go on Google, you know, retro candy.
Did you ever go to Stuckey's?
Not that hard to find.
Stuckey's.
Do you remember the candy store in the front of the Stuckey's, and then they had those Pearson's nut rolls, that salted nut roll, that long thing that was red. It was like a foot long and was red.
Yep.
Man, were those good.
Yeah, that's so typically Georgia. Yes, Stuckey's everywhere. You betcha. All right. Well, thanks for calling.
It's funny how
Brian.
The certain regional focus like that really
Oh, yeah. And when they first were building the interstate system and I decided to drive all of it, there wasn't that much to drive. There was literally a Stuckey's every 25 miles. It was just wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Rich in Indiana. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. talked to you once before when you were on with Nick on the old Nick DiGilio show, but
hearing
you guys talk about Ferrera Pan, they just built a huge factory over in DeKalb, Illinois, and they're supposed to be employing like 500 to 600 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
So they're still in business.
Through some amazing changes in the last couple of years, and they are emerging as one of the biggest, you know, domestic candy companies today. They recently merged with Farley's and Sather's, and Brock's has come under their control. They're a really good example of a company that knows how to expand in these times. Yeah,
people love them. You betcha. All right, Rich, you call me again.
Your last caller, you can get the buns in all three flavors at Farm and Fleet stores.
Oh,
yeah.
Good to know. All right, Rich. Thanks. All right, we'll get to Mark and Aurora, James on the South Side. Absolutely, there's room for you. We're talking to Dr. Leslie Goddard, who is an authority, a candy historian, no doubt. And yes, there are candy museums, and I'm sure that you've got a memory or two you'd like to share. So 888-876-5593 is 888-RALEIGH on WGN Radio. We are talking candy, and we're doing that with Dr. Leslie Goddard, author and candy historian. And I knew this would be the floodgates, Dr. Goddard, just knew it. Mark in Aurora, welcome back to WGN Radio.
My most nostalgic candy bar is Coffee Crisp, and there's currently a Halloween version available of that called Coffin Crisp. But anyway, that aside, I first discovered it in the 60s when I was growing up in Western New York State, and it was coming over the border from Canada, and at that time it was distributed by the Roundtree Company, and the wrapper was real nice because it was translucent plastic with foil underneath, and that gave the wrapper kind of a golden metallic look. It was just great, and presently the wrapper is just yellow plastic, but I'd like you to answer two questions if you could. One would be, why did it suddenly stop coming over the border from about 1969 or 70 onward? And then secondly, when it changed to Nestle from Roundtree, did they also change the recipe? Now, I make my coffee, you know, my cup of coffee pretty strong, and maybe I'm tasting Coffee Crisp as sweeter because I make my coffee so strong, but I seem to remember that in the 60s, Coffee Crisp had more of a bittersweet flavor, like real coffee.
What do you think?
Yeah, for sure. You know, and this is one of those interesting candy bars. It comes from Britain, which has a different candy tradition than the United States, obviously. But also tends to have a stronger connection with Canada. So many Canadian favorite candies are originated in the UK, and that's the case with Coffee Crisp. Coffee Crisp has gone through, and it's got some, you know, and I'm digging back into my memory here. I believe the change happened because it was a switch over to Nestle's. That might have been when suddenly it became more difficult to find in 69, although don't hold me to that. But it is absolutely true that they tweak the recipes. And again, I don't know the specifics for Coffee Crisp, but very often they will say, oh, it's the same, you know, it's the same basic formula.
Wow.
We're just tweaking it. And they will swear up and down that it doesn't change the taste of it, but people who really know and really love these candies, they can taste the difference. I remember when Fannie Mae candies were in the Midwest, when they moved their production to Ohio, they said, oh, it's all the same recipes, same, and they even said same ingredients, but you could taste the difference. So I believe that was the change of it. But, you know, I'm so glad you mentioned that. I remember a lot of candy bars used to come with that translucent wrapping. Not the foil underneath for all of them, but that translucent wrapping was really classic candy wrapping. Most of them over the decades switched to plastic. But, boy, there's something about that original that's both nostalgic and
a real marker of the you know, classic part of our history.
Oh, it looked wonderful because the background was golden and the letters were red, yeah. And you could see this metallic shine through it, and it just looked so wonderful back then.
Yeah, and
how interesting to be flavored like coffee, right?
Right, and you look at the more modern varieties of it when they brought out Coffee Crisp yogurt. When they even have those words together, you know they changed formulas. You know, that's just
right.
Complete heresy. Yogurt should not be in the equation. Yeah, exactly.
And now
and, you
know, when you get it
varieties, naturally, if you go to Japan where Kit Kat is a big thing, and they'll have all kinds of, you know, matcha-flavored Kit Kat and... it's amazing. Companies are very keyed into variations and local variations, and again, constantly throwing out spinoffs to see what's gonna hit.
Yeah,
and nowadays, when you get Coffee Crisp on eBay, you're getting it from either Michigan or Montreal.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for calling, Mark. I appreciate it. All right, so, you know, it's interesting when you mention local tastes or a company is catering to them, and it's so true. And when I discovered that the German favorite was orange Coca-Cola, I thought that answered so many questions.
Great example.
Yeah, exactly. And Coca-Cola is one of those examples where they swear they didn't change things, that they went back to the original formula. No, you did not go back to the original formula. We know that from Mexican Coke, which still has sugar in it for the moment, at least the stuff they bring us. But, you know, our taste buds have not failed us. This is these are changes. So I'm so glad you joined us. Now, is there a museum? I know there's one in Wisconsin, but there is a Chicago Museum for candy?
There really isn't. And it kind of reflects the fact that Chicago, well, I mean, there are archives for some of the individual companies, and you can certainly visit candy stores that will give you a lot of the history behind these. I think there's a store called Candiality. But, you know, it reflects the fact that I think a lot of candy history, because candy is fun and nostalgic, it doesn't always get taken seriously as part of history. You know, you think of Chicago history and you think of, the stockyards and Pullman cars and wheat and...
I think
people forget. It's deadly serious.
Yes, this is deadly serious. I think it's a topic that needs to be explored even more thoroughly, and I think that we need to do some edible investigation, and I'm sure that we will be joined, hopefully, by you, Dr. Goddard, again. Thanks for spending an hour with us on WGN.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, open lines next right here on WGN Radio.